Blog Talk Radio.
And asking for a clear heart and looking forward to a strong, clear mind that I know he will provide. Welcome to When Black Men Talk. I'm Mark Elliott. Thank you for giving us a listening, wherever you found us, either on Spotify, podcasts, or Google Podcasts. It's a time of the week where three gentlemen get together. Let's see, one is in Connecticut, one is in Ohio, one is in Illinois. And we do a little provocative talking that will explore the male perspective on life, love, and relationships, always keeping an honest self-evaluation. And we try our best not to shower from things need to be said. Soon to be joined by Mr. DeMaurice and Mr. Charles. Last week, these two gentlemen went in. When I say went in, they really went in speaking about their mothers have passed. And I said this numerous times, and it's tough to get cats to really open up and speak and just let loose. And I applaud these two for doing it, because sometimes as men, we speak more to ourselves than we speak to others. And it takes courage to really speak and open up and to share your emotions. And, you know, others are listening and not thinking about being judged and all that stuff that's going on. So I applaud them for what they do, but it's nothing new. They've been doing it for the past 3 to 4 years. It might be a little longer than that, but either way, we're going to keep on doing it. Mr. DeMaurice, come on in. How you feeling, sir?
Feeling good, man. Feeling good. Enjoying the weather here in Chicago. Gotten a lot warmer. It's been in the 50s, so we call it really warm here in Chicago. So, but let me borrow that spaceship, man. I'll bring it right back.
That's amazing. You can call 50s warm, man. It's funny, here in Connecticut, we're looking forward to some 50s, bro. I think the later this week we're going to get into 50s, but it's funny when you call 50s warm, man. Isn't that something?
Oh,
50s
yeah.
Warm? That's,
yeah.
That's just, like, unreal, man. What's the weather like in Ohio, Mr. Charles?
Depends on what day it is, man. Today it's, like, what, 30s, maybe? Well, let me see. Actually, it was 43, but now it's 36. It dropped. But we get a heat wave coming this week. 61 tomorrow, baby. 61.
That's what we're talking about.
So, anything better than 40, 42 here with no wind, that's exercise weather outdoors. I love that. So, yeah, no, it's some people were complaining, oh, it's so cold outside. I was like, dude, it's just March. We almost done. So I'm excited because I'm getting past. We got through December and January pretty almost unscathed, right? Pretty easy. Now it's like it's spring and summer, man. I'm going to be outside all the time. So, looking forward to the warm weather, sure.
Same here, man. Looking forward to it. You know, some days you spoke of the wind. Some days you take the wind away, it's really not that bad, but that wind is brutal, man. It's like a woman that's on revenge or something, man. It just cuts you right up. Bang, 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 bang. We have some conversations from time to time after the sports show we do on Thursday nights, and some of the talks that come out of them, man, are super strong. And I want to go back to something that a couple of things that came out this past Thursday that may not have made it onto the sports show, but it'll make it up here. And I'm going to come to you first, Mr. DeMaurice, because you brought up a topic that was real interesting about women in the Bible. Before I turn it over to you, I just want to say it's interesting because, you know, we talked about some things about women last week. And I said it last week, and I always say one of God's best creation was designed in women. I don't think that we honor them, adore, and pay enough attention, respect them enough. With that being said, Mr. DeMaurice, can you enlighten us on some things and some things you're doing and some things that you spoke of last week at the end of the sports show?
Yeah, I've been reading this book called the Apocrypha, which includes the books of the Ethiopian Bible. And it talks about different stories that a lot of different books that were omitted out of the Bible. And I was noticing that some of the stuff that I've been reading has been omitting women, their roles and how powerful they were thought of in these Bibles. So there was one story about this king, King Darius, who had a banquet with all these kings and governors and all these other, you know, powerful men around. And they were discussing the subject, which is the most powerful. And so there were three things that came into the topic of which was more powerful: wine, kings, or women. And so there was someone who stood up and talked about how wine is most powerful because it could bring you from a rich man to a poor man. It can change your thoughts. It could do a number of things under the influence of this substance. And that is the most powerful. And then another one came up and talked about how kings are most powerful because they can rule, they can send armies out into battle, they can stop battles, they can stop wars, they could garnish all the gold that comes and riches that come from these wars and all these things that the kings do. And then a third person stepped up and said it's women. And so they began to make their case about this. And they said, you know, kings come from women and all the people that rule come from women, and that things that the kings do as far as wars and all that other stuff and gather all this gold, if they see a beautiful woman walk by, their mouth will be agape, and they would set all their gold and riches and give them to the woman. When a man or king marries a woman, they soon forget their parents, their mother and father. And so how powerful women are compared to what they were talking about. And that's what I really kind of noticed when I'm reading these books. You know, we all kind of grew up with the Bible, with the 66 books, but I always wanted to find out what was omitted and why. And it just made me think that, you know, if we were brought up to kind of think this way about women and put them into more value, would they be treated the way they are treated today? And so it just made me think about that when I'm reading some of these books and how the roles of women were very prominent. And then when we read our Bibles now and other books now of religion, that women aren't really prominent. And was this omission really set up that way so that men could really kind of be more powerful without question? Or was they really trying to put these books together to really tell us what we needed to know to kind of be better people? So it just made me wonder that when I start reading these stories, what was the original goal of leaving some of these books out and putting some of these books in?
I'm going to go with your first option you gave of men kind of fearing women in a sense. But let's be honest, man, because men basically are loaded with insecurities. And we, you know, we walk around trying to be macho and act like we're not, but we are. And we will eliminate any potential threat that we feel that may come up against us. And men have been doing this from the beginning of time, man. They kind of fear something. And it may not be a potential threat that they may even see within the near future, but they're always kind of casting around looking at potential threats. So I'm sure back then if they felt that it was going to be an evil playing field and at some point of their security where they can kind of roll them out to make them feel more prompt and dominant, I wouldn't be surprised if that was a role that was taken, because at all times men want to feel singular, strength, and strong. And sometimes when they don't even feel it, they're acting until they may feel it. So they're always trying to build a situation where they can basically monopolize and handle things. And it's sad in a sense because we lose out when we don't allow women to basically offer up and bring something to the forefront. I mean, look at current day times, man. If you look at what's really going on in this country in the past year and a half, or even longer than that, look how black women, just in general, have become the prominent. Look at the vice president. Look at the woman that basically took this country, took the election of this country, and said, I'm going to make sure it turns out this way. So you can't tell me when I watch how they have finagled. And look at the brothers that before them try to do certain things. And a lot of times with men, sometimes when you even set out to be the honorable one, the strong one, and try to lead and provide, we always kind of tend to yield to temptation, bro. We fall down to temptation. And most times the temptation is what? a woman.
Women
are money.
Yes. Yeah.
Women are money. Are booze, for that matter. You know, booze. We don't tend to ride as strong. Tend to ride as firm. We don't tend to buckle up as strong. Where they will resist those temptations and stay focused. They focus on the task at hand, man, and complete it. Where we get sidestepped, man. I could throw some names out, which I'm not going to right now because I want to bring Mr. Charles in. Of cats that we know that started out and we probably seen go straight, and it wasn't long before somebody came in and said, you know, what's your weak point? And they played around your weak point enough to where they was able to take you off your focus. But based on what Mr. DeMaurice brought to the forefront, Mr. Charles, I want to get your reaction, sir.
Yeah, I think he's right on point in a lot of it. It really makes you start to think about how people view things and what's most important. And when you really look at the situation, it tells you the value and the power of a certain situation. So it makes you go, And a lot of times, because of the way we were raised as male, we don't really want to acknowledge and really say what we think is true, or even from the standpoint of the history, because that long-term history has been drilled in us for so long that to bring up something different now, like Mr. DeMaurice, he's doing continue to do research, putting out valid and information, it's hard for us to kind of go back off of that now, because you're like, oh man, it's kind of like and I didn't even get into that, but something that you have believed for a long time and you have not entertained something else. I think we get so caught up in it because we don't want somebody else to say, and that's crazy as hell. And that's the comfort zone that we've been into. But I agree with him. I think it's very important to continue to look and continue to see. So if they're all falsehoods, we continue to share what's real with the others that follow behind us.
Absolutely. Sometimes I'm amazed, man. I sit back and I'm amazed. And I think that we as men have to kind of move out of our own way sometime and give them the space. And don't be afraid to share that space. Mr. Charles, you said something that was interesting, too, on the sports show, and I want you to kind of go into it, man, because sometimes we look at some things we're just speaking of, and you go far back to get it, and sometimes it's right in front of you. But you made a point of one Booker T. Washington that when you spoke of it, man, I believe opened some eyes and ears. And if you don't mind, please elaborate for us.
Yes, it was really about the relationship between Madam C.J. Walker, who really was kind of the not so much the inventor, but she was one of the strongest individuals who helped develop care products for African-American women. And the story goes about her actually finding someone else's product and actually improving it to a point where it really became valuable and made her a lot of money and whatnot. But prior to really being successful, she sought out various individuals to get their endorsement so other people would be open to it, particularly in the business sense. And one of those individuals she sought out the approval of was Booker T. Washington. And, of course, she knew about Booker T. Washington and what he said meant a lot. He was one of the leaders. And she went to him, tried to make several different attempts to meet with him and get his endorsement. But for some reason or another, he was either avoiding her, he didn't take it serious, or whatever. So then she had hoped that they had in 1912 was a National Negro Business League convention. And she was in the audience because she knew he was familiar with her and he was acknowledging different people. And she thought, she knew she bought a ticket at the table with the big dogs, right? He was going to call her out. She's in the audience all excited, and he said, I'd like to call somebody up and introduce you to her. She's a wonderful woman, blah, blah, blah. And then it came up to that point. And he called her rival up, a lady that really wasn't into it like she was, and she was, like, livid. Like, they had to hold her down, hold her back, they say, in order to kind of calm her down. She's like, I was trying to get with you and try to connect with you, and you won't even acknowledge me? And it's just bizarre from that standpoint where after he would not acknowledge her, she stormed onto the stage and gave her own introduction. So she went up there and said who she was. And, of course, Booker T. Washington was upset. Then he goes in the hallway and he told her, he said, no, your outburst was rude and uncalled for. And he said he accused her company of shaming Negroes in the Eurocentric standards of beauty. And, you know, and he said, and that soon you will have Negro women out earning Negro men. And then this is what he said. How is America going to take us seriously if we allow our women to surpass us? And then he says that outburst that you gave inside the auditorium in there is precisely the reason why you ladies need to be kept in your place.
Kept in your place. Wow. Here again, man, he didn't want that playing field level in a sense. He wanted to basically monopolize it and thinking that men always must take that step forward. And hearing that, Mr. DeMaurice, I know you have a response, sir. Feel free to offer it up.
Yeah, it's someone once said that, you know, the way to judge a society is how they treat their women. And so this is what we see. I mean, the continuation of putting women in a role that really hurts us as a society, not bringing things to the table politically, religiously, about, you know, all the things that they can enrich our life with. We kind of suppress it, not kind of, but we've had ways to suppress it with being men and not wanting them to be in the forefront. There's an old saying that the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. And so with all the suppression and trying to keep women down, they are still key to ruling this world because they influence us as children. They are our first loves. They are the person that first nurtures us. And not to downplay the role of men, but they are our first teachers. Our parents are our first teachers, and especially our moms. So why would we as a society, and this is a rhetorical question, why would we as a society try to suppress that, try to hide that, try to keep that knowledge hidden or not bring that to the forefront so we can benefit from it instead of being intimidated or afraid of it? And it just amazes me that is the case. And how far are we behind for doing this? That's what I think about. How far ahead we would have been if we had a society that treated the genders equally, and how far ahead we would be right now with the input, the knowledge, and all that women bring to the game, and instead of having this contest between male and female.
Well stated. Well stated. It's interesting because in the national scope of things, harassment in the form of sexual harassment is really starting to take center stage in some areas, especially if you're in the Northeast. In the Northeast, it's really kind of starting to kind of come up again. It's interesting because I can't believe, it's hard to believe, that in this current day and time that sexual harassment still even exists. Like anything else, I guess. You assume sometimes it's eradicated, it's downplayed, it's kind of, you know, hiding out in corners. But in a lot of areas, it still goes on, and it's still prominent. And it's unbelievable to me. It's unbelievable that we still find ourselves in situations. And I know a lot of people go, well, you know, when a guy's in power, it's not necessarily a man's in power that's doing the sexual harassing. It's not. And my job, basically, for the past several months, I took a class about a week ago, a two-hour class, and they went through all type of harassment, not only basically sexual, race, gender. I mean, there's so many things that falls under it. And the thing I took from it, one of the things I took from it is that, and I think what's going to start to happen, too, in a lot of different places, someone said there was a law that was written. I'm not sure about that, so I don't want to quote on that. But what I can gather is that these corporations are tired of spending money for folks that are doing simple harassments, big harassments, whatever. And they're not even going to wait till it gets to the point where it can be a legal fight anymore. It's going to get rid of you. So basically what they're doing, let's say from where I'm working, they're putting you in a class and showing you the do's and the don'ts and have you sign off on it. So you can't be ignorant to it. Not like you wasn't told. And once it takes place, that's how they're going to kind of handle it. But I want to go back to sexual harassment for a second, because I don't even know if, as men, a lot of men, it amazes me. Well, I see it sometimes, and I don't know if men realize that they're doing it, because a lot of times men are so caught up in trying to manipulate, capitalize, and have a woman, and they see, and it's an ego stroke for them. They come across a beautiful woman that to set out, it becomes like a challenge to set out to see if they can have their way with them, and they'll forget mentally where they are, what's going on, and what's at stake. And don't get me wrong, you know, we always heard for years, you know, you thinking with the little head under the big head. I mean, to an extent, yes, it is what it is. But I'm amazed when men in general just don't think up top at all. What's the potential loss that can happen of just saying and doing something that's idiotic and stupid? And not only that, you're making someone feel uncomfortable based on what you're trying to achieve. And it's like she's put in front of you for you to basically just to have your way. You're not respecting her as a human being. You're not respecting her as a woman. And I say from time to time that a lot of time men walk around in a semi-porn or full straight porn mindset, and they don't come out of that. And they walk around daily thinking that, you know, women are just kind of put there to basically service them when they deem it's necessary or when it's possible. And they think that's how life's supposed to be. So I wanted to spend a little time talking about this and kind of go into it, because I don't think we ever really recovered this. And if we did, we may recover it a little different shine. But sexual harassment, the making of unwelcome and inappropriate sexual remarks or physical advances. I'll come to you first, Mr. Charles, because here again, I'm dumbfounded. You know, to see men still say, do things that cross the line when it comes to sexual harassment. Am I the only one that feeling this way, or you kind of can understand that as well?
No, I can understand that because it's still real. And when you really are involved in the situation, particularly if you're in a position where you work a lot with women, or you're in a situation that's primarily women, then you kind of get the gist of it. I had to do that. I was, at one point, one of my jobs, I was the only male. And then, of course, it was all white women, and it was just me. And that was double trouble. So I was the only male, and now, of course, I was the only man of color. So I couldn't look a certain way. I couldn't even say certain things. I really didn't have conversations with them outside of work. But a lot of men are lost. It's almost as if they think like it's way back in the day, things you could get away with, but all the modern-day laws and all of the advances that women have made in society, there's no way in hell you're going to get away with that. Definitely. And for those to be, those individuals or those men to continue to act in such a manner, they're clueless. It's going to come back to haunt them, even if the point that they are intimidating a certain woman, because that's part of it, too. It's intimidation where they feel like, I can do whatever I want to because I'm an intimidator. And I'm going to make her fearful for her life sometimes even. And she's going to just go along with what I want her to do.
There's a prominent college football coach we talked about him on the sports show that I know we talked about him some this week, and his name came up a couple of weeks ago and we talked about it. And I want to kind of quote his lawyer, because USA Today was trying to get some information that was basically sealed up from public knowledge about this cat when he used to be back at LSU. And they went to court, and they wanted to be public knowledge. They wanted to be able to print it and put it out there, part of their story, what he was doing and stuff that was going on. And I guess when USA Today went to court to get it, his lawyer, of course, came to fight to keep it sealed. And the judge says, as of March 31st, it can be open and sealed to the public. But what I found to be interesting was his lawyer's argument was that it cannot be sealed primarily because there's stuff in there that if it's revealed, would be damaging to my client. It may have a harmful effect on his earning potential. Okay. Now, just those statements alone tells you all you need to know. But I'm going to wind you back to what I said earlier. Now, it has a harm, and it has harm. It could damage his earning potential. It could be damaging harm. But when he was pursuing the young woman, making her feel uncomfortable, when he was basically telling people, don't hire any woman that look, if she doesn't look a certain way, if she doesn't, she's not built a certain way. When he was trying to get with young college women and do all that stuff, that wasn't damaging. So overlook all that, because this man need to be able to make a good damn, need to go out and make a good damn living. That's all that matters. Because first he's got to pay me. So. Excuse me. He's got to be able to make a good damn living. So what he did in the past, whoever feelings were hurt, what they got to live through, damn all that. And that's almost like the men mentality. You know, we want to kind of sometimes act like we're in a locker room and go out there, but as long as we had to go back to life and live like nothing's happened and go on, everything should be good. But at the bottom of this, too, it's a lack of respect. It's just a pure form of lack of respect, because if you basically have to basically apply yourself to someone and say these things to get them to respond to you, from the start, you're not respecting that person. You're just not. Dee Maurice, you know, I hear again, I find it utterly amazing that men, you know, I've seen many lawsuits brought up against. I remember years ago, there was a lady, you know, you and I are, I don't know if you are, but I should be a New York Knicks fan. And it was a woman that worked for the New York Knicks and basically was accusing one of the vice presidents of sexual harassment. As the story goes, he basically came up to her, tried to, you know, talk to her to get her out with him. She chose not to. He said some things to her, called her different names, called her, you know, I'm not going to go into the names he called her, made her life harsher. Well, you know, she kept things documented like she should. I think it was after a period of time, she filed a lawsuit. And what I found to be interesting, you know, she picked up several million. If I remember correctly, I think she got like 20 million. But let's say it was several. It was over 10 that she won. And the owner of the Knicks, he got on trial, said some dumb things. But if you look at the Knicks' side of view, even when they lost, they said, you know, and paying the money, we don't believe she was sexually harassed. So you're paying $20 million something to someone based on what? I mean, I would think, and I know he has a lot of money, but if you take $20 million of my money, I'm got to be, it's going to wake me up to what basically took place. So how is it that men, year after year, Mr. DeMaurice, are just still so dumbfied and so stupid to the fact when it comes to sexual harassment?
I thought about this, and it's going to compare to another group that we see with the same characteristics. Think about it. As a society, men have been privileged. We've been put in a privileged position. Hook or crook, men are privileged. I don't care what race you are. If you're a man, you're privileged. And your privilege is you have more privileges over women. You can get away with certain things that women can't get away with. You can do certain things that women can't do. So when you're put in a position of privilege, you tend to do and say and act stupidly towards the people you have privilege over, or that you can oppress, or you can suppress, or that you have an advantage over. And so men are put in that position in the society. It's a patriarchal society. And so think about this. Other groups that feel that same way, even though they aren't as privileged, but they're part of that privileged group, think about how they act. Think about the white supremacists and how they're entitled to certain things. And so as men, we do the same thing. We feel like we're entitled to certain things. We feel like we're entitled to tell a woman when and where she should use her body and how she should dress and all this other stuff, and whether she should have a baby or not, or family or not. We in the society tend to control that. And so this is how, when people are in a privileged position, sometimes act. Instead of acting wisely with that position and say, you know what, I can't tell, you know, this person what they can do with their body and all this stuff, because this is a human being, we dehumanize them, we put them in at a you know, they're second or third as far as the hierarchy of human beings, and we justify how we treat them. So we're part of a privileged group, whether we realize it or not, and that we can say certain things, we can do certain things, we can act certain ways, we can just carry on in certain ways, and that we don't care how it affects somebody else or the other gender, because they don't matter. They don't matter. It's my world, and if you want to live in it, you follow what I say follow. And that's the mentality that men in this society, whether or not they do it directly or indirectly, that's the kind of the rule of law, that men can get away with a lot of stuff. And then now when the laws come back and say, nope, you can't do that, now it's not even, you're not even man enough to admit it, you know, I was wrong. You got to be forced to put out a statement. You got to be forced to, you know, to go against this privilege that you felt you earned or you feel you should have because you're a man. I was sitting there watching the new movie Coming to America, and they talk about the same issue about, you know, got to change the landscape of what's going on and put women in their rightful place, you know, because the way things are, it's not working. It doesn't work. And so I thought they did that. They illustrated that quite well in that movie in an entertainment kind of fashion. But yeah, we're privileged, man. And we are yet to relinquish that privilege and see the fallacies of that privilege.
Yeah. I think too, another small part of this, and I see this is going on currently, is that sometimes when people tend to like a person for what they're doing, not sometimes, it happens a lot, and we see them do some things that we know are not right, we tend to want to look the other way and give them, you know, a pass. And I don't think that we should do that anymore. We should never have been doing it. You know, wrong is wrong and right is right, and it should be judged and dealt with such. And if someone that we don't like, we're going to come down with the hammer. Well, if it's somebody that we're cool with, you know, we want to pull back and act like, well, you know, maybe it's kind of one of, no. You know, it is what it is. Deal what's put in front of you. And I see that with the governor of New York. You know, there's some people that basically feel that, you know, some things he did was wrong. Then some people like the way he handled what went on with the pandemic in New York. And they kind of like want to give it a pass. No, what he handled with the pandemic was his damn job. That was his job. But the way he handled the other situation need to be dealt with, and to be dealt with swiftly. So, you know, you can't like a person to where you like them enough or love them enough to where their wrongs are okay. Wrong is wrong and right is right. And I just find that amazing sometimes. I see that happen a lot of times. Because some people, well, you know, no, there's no well, you know. It's based on what happened. And I wonder sometimes if the people that go, well, you know, if that was your daughter, if that was your 25-year daughter, he's asking about, do you like to date older men? Asking about his sex life. How would you feel if she came up and tell you that? If that was your sister, that he's asking that too, would you still be the great governor of New York? Would it matter to you at that point, the type of job he did during the pandemic? Would that make you turn a blind eye to and act like, hey, it's okay? But sometimes pain is good as long as we're not feeling it. But there's times when we have to understand others' pains and see their pain and deal with their pain and not turn a blind eye to it. Gentlemen, let's take a little break. We come back. We're going to kind of change gears a little bit, but not too much. We're going to talk about flirting, good old-fashioned flirting. What is that about? I'm sure it's been around maybe many years before I kind of hit the face of this earth, and it'll probably be around long after I'm gone. But I don't really necessarily care for it. I mean, that sound like, whoa, but I don't care for it. I'll explain why in a little bit. But flirting behaves as you go through attraction or trying to attract someone. And this is the reason why I don't like it. But for amusement rather than serious intentions. Because to me, if you're flirting and ain't going nowhere, why are you doing it? It's a waste of my time, waste of my energy. It's just a waste. So, I'm not about the amusement. If I want amusement, if I want amusement, I'll go to Great Adventures. I don't flirt for amusement, bro. I just don't. So that's it to me. Because to me, flirting is trying to get a reaction of a potential possibility. And I'm not even going to give that to you if I know it ain't going nowhere. I'm not amused. It doesn't blow my ego up. It doesn't do nothing to flirt. You tell me what you want to do, then we can talk. But flirting and playing around it, I've never been for it. I don't flirt. I remember years ago, a little while ago, I was helping someone. They needed information, and I took time out to help them and gave the information and walked away. A few minutes later, she walked by, and she gives me a number. I said, okay, that's all this is. She said, well, you were flirting. I said, I wasn't flirting. I was helping you. She said, well, you were smiling. I said, I smile all the time. That doesn't mean I was flirting with you. I mean, realistically, I was just helping you out. So maybe that could be misconstrued as flirting if I don't walk around mean mugging, but, here again, I'm not going to flirt with you. If I want you, you'll know it. If I desire you, you'll know it. I'm not going to flirt. I'm just not a flirter. And I look at it the same way. Don't start something you ain't ready to finish. Don't beat around the bush. Be a woman about it. Handle your business. But, again, I'm not for the amusement. When it doesn't have serious intentions, I'm not. I'm just not for it. So, play that with someone else. But I'll come back to you with this, Mr. DeVries. I mean, that's my stance on it. But how do you feel about flirting in current times, my brother?
I don't even know if I flirt. I don't know how to. I don't know how to flirt. I was never taught how to flirt. So I don't know really what it is. Because I've been accused of flirting. I'm like, I was just being nice. They say it's an eye contact. That's the start of flirting. And then, you just kind of going back and forth. But I don't know I don't know when I'm doing it or how I'm doing it. When you're interested in somebody, you pay a little bit more attention. You try to engage in conversation. Is that flirting? I don't know. I have a tendency to be able to make people laugh. Is that flirting? I guess it depends on the person that you're interacting with or how they're kind of looking at it. But I don't know. This day and age, it's almost like you really can't, because if you do, somebody can really misconstrue what you're kind of the messages you're trying to send off, and it can get you into trouble. Or if it's not received well, then maybe that could get you into trouble. So all this time when I hear about flirting, it's like, okay, yeah, I've heard the word before. People have thrown that out. I truly don't know what it really means to flirt. I just know when somebody's interested, you get a feeling that they're interested, you pursue it, and if it's not, kind of equally matched, then you go, okay, let me back off because this person's not really feeling it. But I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I truly don't know what flirting is, and I know, if I don't know, I'm probably not really good at it.
I hear you, man. I hear you. It's it's different. It's different. I think sometimes flirting is a way to test the water to see if there is an interest, and maybe go from that point. Mr. Charles, what do you think about flirting? How you feel about flirting in current day times, sir?
I'm kind of like DeMaurice. I'm kind of lost. Maybe that was my problem as a young man too. Somebody would say, "Oh, you can tell she likes you." And I'm like, "Well, just the way she was acting, brushed her hair back, and all this." I was like, "Man, I don't know." And they're like, "Well, you can tell. Can't you just tell?" I mean, but the other part too is I did not want to make the mistake of being wrong, right? You think somebody flirting with you, and they're like, "Nah, I was just being nice," and you're like, "Oh,
yeah, yeah.
got that wrong." But I think these days and times, I'm kind of clueless. I'm like that with you guys, particularly with the point of if you have something you want to say or whatever, you have to let me know. That since I'm very cautious about harassment and being overzealous, then I don't want to make a mistake. So you gonna have to let me know because maybe I'm not even looking for it, even though it might be there. You might say, "Hey, how you doing? What's going on?" And I think if being funny, as Dee Marie said, and joking and saying something sarcastically, if that's flirting, then hell, I've been flirting my whole damn life. I didn't know it.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that. Yeah, I mean, borderline flirting. I'm not going to say that. I would consider that as definitely being flirting. Here again, it's trying to get an attention. It's trying to basically, someone you find attractive, you're trying to lurk and do some things. At the same time, you know, you're not looking for it to go anywhere. You know, it's more of attention grab, stuff of that nature. But I will come back with you, Mr. Charles, that if you look at flirting, that and look at perspective, what we just talked about, sexual harassment, is there much a difference between the two?
Definitely. Yeah, I think so. Flirting is just, you know, you might say something, you might compliment somebody on their dress. You might compliment them one way or another. Or you might say something because you have relationships that's sarcastic or whatever. But when you are harassing them, it's kind of like you over the top. Damn, girl, you got some tight jeans. I mean, it's, to me, flirting, sexual harassment is more blatant because you clearly have made the person feel uncomfortable. And normally, when you do that sexual harassment, in my opinion, you're over the top. It's not like one time. It's like when you continue on to see how far you can go. And if a woman kind of opens the door where she just kind of goes along with it, I think that's the test for a lot of men that are in that sexual harassment. See how far they can go with the woman. And she keeps letting them on, and it's like, oh, she wanted it anyway. But she falls, pushes back, and that lets you know. But definitely, I think there's a difference because you can flirt, you can smile at somebody, or you can even wink at them. I don't think that's sexual harassment. That's more like flirting. And they'll let you know whether or not they're into it. But I think there's a major difference between the two.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there's a difference between the two. I think flirt sometimes can turn into harassment and its sexual nature. But, yeah, there is a difference. Mr. DeMaurice, how do you view flirting and sexual harassment? Or is there a difference between the two?
Definitely. Sexual harassment it's in the word. It's harassment. You're harassing the person. You've made your mind that this is what you want, or this is who you want, and you're not going to take no for an answer. And so, or you have a very difficult time taking rejection. Like, no, this person's not interested. You need to just move on. So you pursue it. I was watching this video the other day about this woman who she was on, I think, YouTube, and she was saying how sometimes she will push back to see how hard the person will come back and be more manly and more aggressive. And I think sometimes it's a mixed signal, but it shouldn't be with men, a mixed signal if it's harassment. If it's somebody who's just obviously like, listen, I'm not interested, or they're trying to be nice about it and not really hurt your feelings, because there is a physical danger that comes with this too, because women are you know, sometimes not physically strong as men. They're trying to get out of a situation without it becoming confrontational, verbally violent, or physically violent. So the man might get his wires crossed since she's not being aggressively like that way, that he's getting the green light to keep going. But it's definitely harassment. Why would you want to be with somebody that is uncomfortable with you? That's the thing I never understood. So flirting, you know, if you're flirting, you're talking to somebody, it's tit for tat, you're going back and forth, you're smiling, laughing, you know, you're, you know, kind of playing the doing the kabuki dance, you know, around each other until the conversation gets more seriously and you can kind of decide what you two are going to do or what you're up for. But harassment is like a one-way deal where it's one person trying to pursue and the other is not giving you any feedback at all. Why would you want to be with somebody who's really not comfortable not giving you that feedback? And so that's the thing that always bothered me, that you don't get the sign. And this can go both ways too, because I've had women who were pursuing and I wasn't interested, and you give them the sign over and over again and you tell them over and over again and you're more explicit, but they can't take rejection. And so I see more men that, you know, they're tired of taking the rejection. They want what they want and they feel like they're privileged or they are entitled to what they want and they go after it. And those to me are men that never really saw a man and got a good example of a man who could take rejection or to move on or to act as a man in those situations and be the man that you're supposed to be instead of overpowering a situation thinking that once I overpower, then everything will be okay. She'll like it when, you know, I give her all that I have to give. Kind of mentality, instead of saying, you know what, she's not interested, they're ever fishing to see, so let me pursue that. But it always bothered me that as men, you don't pick up on those signs that say, okay, this is not the one for me. She's not interested. No matter how I feel, put my feelings aside, this person feels that they're not interested. So that should be the clue to say, you know what, if she's not interested, why would I be pursuing it? Because it's not going to be as good as it would be if she was interested.
You know, you bring up a point that in the direction I really wanted to go in, because they can't notice that she's not interested in them, and she's not really buying in. And that could be flirting or harassment in a sense. But part of the reason I believe that takes place is because men are so locked into the chase. They're excited about the chase. The chase brings them excitement, euphoria. It's like, you know, it's okay, I got a chance to prove myself, my worth, and she's going to see me for who I am and all that nonsense. And I think that's part of the reason why the chase part is why sometimes a married man or a man in a relationship that's in a solid, strong relationship will chase just for that excitement. They're locked into the excitement of basically trying to push themselves onto someone and make someone see them the way they perceive themselves, and they get caught up in the chase. Does it have any relevance to you, Mr. DeMaris?
It could, but at what point do you realize that, okay, this ain't working? This is just not working. This person is not playing the game, so to speak, that they don't want to be part of this game. And I think that, yeah, there is a thing where we're kind of hunter-gatherers kind of mentality as men, but when do you realize that the game is not, that you can't get the game? You can't conquer. You cannot conquer this. This is not yours. And for me, I always felt like if it's not mine, it's not offered to me, then I don't touch it. I can't overpower and make it mine. So if it's not mine, if it's not given to me, it's not offered, then I'm out of pocket. I'm out of pocket. And some of us as men don't think that way. They don't think that way. I was reading this article real quick. I was reading this article years ago about how in this country, man, a husband is still, in certain parts of this country, you know, you could be married, but it's not considered rape if you just go and just take your wife and she doesn't want it. It's not considered rape. I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Because the privilege is I'm married to you, so you just do what I want. You're mine. You know, regardless of how you feel physically, you're just mine. And it's the mentality that needs to stop. But there are certain parts of the country where women can't prosecute their husbands for rape. That I didn't want this. This was something that, you know, I did not, you know, we didn't agree to. Just because I'm married doesn't mean I agree to every time he wants to, you know, do his thing that we do it. But I was shocked about that. And why, as a husband, would you want to do that to your wife? Somebody you sleep next to. Somebody that fix your food. Why would you want to violate that person and be put in a situation where you ain't waking up one day?
You touched on another thing that was interesting. I remember, I think it was last year, there was a special on a documentary done on HBO where they were showing how rape cases in this country, the majority of them don't even get pursued, bro.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even spend any time on it. They treat it like it didn't happen. They'll collect the evidence and just let it sit in the file. And they showed how one guy, where a couple of guys, but they showed how one guy was able to rape a woman in this particular city or state, and he would do the same. He'll move to another state and do the same thing, and will move. And it was like they were showing how he would have a file. It would be so easy to catch him, but they didn't. There's so many rape case files that they would have that these police departments wouldn't even spend time trying to catch the perpetrator. They wouldn't spend time. I've seen rape cases where, this case in New York, I remember, that sticks in my mind right now. It was a police officer on duty. Him and his buddy picked up a woman from a nightclub in New York, and they escorted her, brought her home. Once he got her home, they brought upstairs, they left her there. He must have came back 2 and 3 times. She was basically so drunk to where she's unconscious. I guess the third time he came back, he had sex with her. And he left. So she filed for rape. And a jury, this is not the police department, they seriously tried to get this guy. But the jury found, they thought that somehow, some way, that he came back there 2 or 3 times and made it consensual. I don't get it. I just, that one I find hard to believe. Because to me, once he dropped her off, he had no business going back there while on duty. So, you know, the point I'm making here is that a lot of rape cases don't even get considered. They, you know, a woman files a rape case, they just take the paperwork, take down the information, and in many cases, it goes nowhere. Nowhere. So when you say a situation where a husband with his wife, what, name me the DA that's going to, sad as this may sound, that's going to spend the time and bring the trial, a husband raping his wife? Think about it. You know, what DA is going to stand up and just do that? Not many. They're not going to look at it as being rape. As wrong as it is, that's the way to look at it. They don't want to bring what they know is a rape case. You know, in a lot of cases, they don't want to bring the trial. Most, a lot of your DAs don't want to bring a case to trial they can't win in the first place. So you might have all the evidence you need, but they want a track record. You know, it's almost like a tally. They want X amount of convictions. They don't want the ones they could lose. So if there's a chance they may lose, it ain't happening. They get the justice. If they don't think they can win, it's not coming to trial. Mr. Charles, coming back to you, in a sense, does it seem like sometimes men get caught way too much up in the chase itself?
Definitely. Because, as you said, some men are just focused in on what they want. And then they get that attitude of, oh, she's not going to tell me no. She's going to talk to me. Like they have they earn the right for a woman to command when a woman speaks to them. But, yeah, they get caught up in it. It's like they wild animals. Maybe that speaks to the point that Dean Maurice made earlier about being hunted. it's just like they get obsessed with this situation. Like, they're out in the jungle chasing, and they get so caught up in it, they forget the normalcy and the reality of what's going on. So, it's almost like they lose, certain men lose their mind. You know, it's like an animalistic type of situation where they just are all in emotions and everything going in. So, yeah. I agree with that. I think some men do. You can sit back and watch. You're like, man, it's almost one of the things. Like, he thirsty as hell, right? That's still a word they use. I'm not sure I'm old now.
Yeah, I've heard that a few times, that word thirsty. Yeah, they get caught up in the chase, man. It's like they're trying to prove something to themselves. And real quick hit, because it seemed like, you know, we would have thought coming of age, that the middle age stuff would kind of kick in and would kind of make guys more thirsty. And I don't know where the middle age name came from, where for us, at least for me, I'll speak for me, and I'll come back to you real quick. In a sense, it seemed like as more men age, and I was younger, kind of look back, like more, the more childish, more young boyish they start to behave. Is that something that, looking back now that we're past that point, or, and we are at that point, looking back at that, Mr. Charles, that seems like something is true, or just kind of just been selected based on the maturity of the male himself?
I think some of it is based on the maturity of the man himself. I mean, because, I mean, you can think about being childish and looking at certain things, but everybody's not like that. I mean, like, it depends on, I think, the way that you were brought up, too. But I think that it really comes down to your experience, because a lot of men are just like, you know what a man said, like, you say, oh, say, you know, you ain't live, so, you know, you got to treat that girl too. You're like, you know how you're supposed to do them, boy. You're supposed to do them this way. You like, kind of bizarre and wild, isn't it, uncle? I really think it depends on the individual in regards to their experience.
Your response, Mr. DeMaurice?
Yeah, I think it depends on the individual and the situation. Some of us are always going to be those boys. I think about in sports and things of that sort, you're always 12 years old. But there are certain situations where you have to step up and you have to be a man. You can't be a 12-year-old in certain situations when you're a father, when you're, working, when you're handling business. You can't be 12 years old. But I think there's the little boy, I think, never goes away inside of us, and I think it comes out in certain things, and we got to make sure that it's appropriate when the child in us comes out, as opposed to the man who we are, and face the situation the way we should face the situations in life.
Gentlemen, let's take a little break. We come back. We'll put some questions up for Mr. DeMaurice, Mr. Charles. It's One Black Men Talk. Thanks for giving us a listen.
Yeah, man. We were talking about spaceships and aliens on the sports show last week, man. And
oh,
after
my
the show, I was doing some editing. I was doing some editing of the show and watching some space shows on cable, you know, while I was doing the editing, kind of sitting back and looking at it, man. And the question I have is, do you believe that there is life form outside of the Earth's realm, in the universe, there are other life forms out there?
Before I answer that, do me a favor. Just say what led you to this question in general and how we got to the question on this sports show.
Why we got to this question? Because there's a quarterback in Cleveland, Baker Mayfield, who the season's over, and it's amazing how the NFL stays in cycle with the news. But Baker Mayfield, I guess, has seen some spaceships. And we were joking about it on the show. And I have a couple of friends who had those experiences where they saw spaceships. One, they said they were in Florida and they saw it. Another one, they said they were in another country and they saw something. And I had no reason to doubt them. I have no reason to doubt them. I'm one to believe that we have never been on the moon. So I'm proud of the people with conspiracy theory. Like, nah, man, they shot that Area 51. Ain't nobody ever been to the moon before, the moon rocks and all this other stuff. But, you know, it got me thinking. We were laughing about it, and people have these experiences. I'm not ready to see that experience and see spaceships or aliens or any reptile people and all that other stuff. But we watch movies and all that stuff. So we got on the subject, we were laughing about this, and it just led me to think, do you believe that there is life out there other than, you know, us out here walking this earth?
There very well might be. I'm not going to totally discount it. Do I believe that quarterback saw something? No, I don't. I just don't. I think sometimes in life, if you use some mind-altering substance, you can see what you want to see, believe what you want to believe. It's just based on when you use it, how much you have used, how much it has altered your mind. Mr. Charles, your reaction.
Oh, no, man. When we talked about it, I thought about it. I mean, but I think about the whole point of when I think about the meaning that when somebody couldn't explain something like the pyramid, they swore since they couldn't understand it, they didn't do it, and they said it was aliens.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that kind of threw that out there too. But in regards to the quarterback, in regards to your question, I think we are, and this is just me, I think we are simple as hell. We think that we're the only persons in this damn universe. big old place. We the only ones, just our own planet. First of all, was no other planets existed, right? That's the first thing. Well, no other planets existed. Now we have concrete evidence. Now maybe that's made up too, but that's just me. We have the concrete evidence of other planets. So you think just here on Earth, we are in charge of everything? We have everything, and we know about everything? Nah, man. Nah, I think there might be something going on. I'm not gonna say, oh yeah, I have concrete evidence that I know there's some other life forms. I think there might be, but I think it's simple to think that it may not be a possibility. I mean, because you think about the stuff they've done with Mars and other places where they have gases and Pluto. I mean, they have these different planets, and this is just one of our solar system we know of. You mean to tell me there's nothing else that can live on those damn places? Just us, right? Because we got all the answers. I'm not saying I'm all into it and I'm doing a Twilight Zone type episode here or nothing, but I think it might be, bro. There's too much evidence with them planets. To just think nothing else is alive but us. Man, come on. Anyway, but I ain't seen nothing. Be Marie see something, he's gonna see him on tell us.
I ain't saying nothing.
He's gonna be
out. This is safe for me.
No, D. Maurice, he's a conspiracist at heart anyway, so I know he's waiting to see something. Your response, Mr. D. Maurice.
Nah, bro, I don't want to see nothing. I don't believe that we're the only beings that exist. I mean, it would be really naive of me to think that and kind of like privileged of me to think, okay, Earthlings are, this is it. We control the universe and all this other stuff. And then, you look at Parliament Funkadelic, some of that stuff that, Parliament Funkadelic, where they were coming from, it made me think of a kid, man. They were talking about, like, galactic kind of stuff, man, that was way out there. And you're like, okay, is this the weed, or have they seen certain things? They made a spaceship. They were kind of connected. So it made you wonder, like, okay. And then the movie Men in Black. And you see guys like Dennis Rodman walking around, like they can't be human. Some people you walk around seeing, like, they gotta be of a certain species. But what really bothers me watching these shows like Ancient Alien and all this other stuff is that when they can't figure it out and they're indigenous or black people involved, it's always aliens. So it led me to believe, like, maybe we just aliens. Maybe we, this is not our world. This is like we belong to another universe, another planet, and they stole us here and put us here, and that's why we can't get used to certain people's ways. So for me to kind of think that we're the only thing that's going in this universe, I'm not, but I'm not sure I'm ready to see what's out there and why we keep probing out there and we're going to do something and cause a galactic war. Maybe I should write a sci-fi movie. I don't know. but I'm going to leave it right there. Let you go with your questions, bro.
Oh, man.
And no, I ain't just sipping or smoking or nothing. It's just me just putting it out there.
Oh.
Keep me proud of that spaceship.
Oh, man. I'm going to tell you, I knew when that question popped up in the sports show, I knew we were in some trouble. I knew. I was like, this
going to
have some legs.
Like, he ain't say nothing. Everybody ignored it. Nobody, you know, like, he ain't say nothing. Like, come on now.
All right, man. All right, Mr. Charles, your question is up.
I am Sir Knows, the boy of the month. I am the seminal seducer. I will never dance.
Psycho.
Put it down. Put it down. Put the weed down.
I will
put
never
down.
Dance. A picture inside a picture. Like trying to put a $5 hat on a nickel. $5
Thank
hat
you.
On a nickel head.
You can't tell me George Clinton wrote a lot of songs sober. You can't tell me he wrote a lot of songs sober, man. You just can't tell me. There's no way you can tell me.
$5 hat on a nickel head.
Anyway. Oh, man. My question is, considering that we have now the first African-American woman whatever her nationality may be, woman of color in the White House as the vice president, do you think that election, her being elected, is going to make a difference and change things the way that women of color are viewed in society?
To an extent, yes. I mean, I think any time that a woman of color comes to a certain position or a certain level of success, what some may deem as success, I think it opens up some. And some hearts are never going to kind of open, and some eyes are never going to kind of open. And that just has to be, accounted for and known. But I thought Michelle Obama did a lot of that when she came along. I mean, I really did. I think Michelle Obama was looked upon as being cherished. I mean, you saw that. I saw that in this country. I seen it when she traveled abroad. My goodness, man. I remember when she first, and I think when he was running, and she would put something on, and you would tell within hours, it was sold out everywhere. You couldn't get it. You just couldn't. So I think she has raised the level, and the vice president has taken it to a new level. So, yeah, without a doubt, because it forces you to be exposed and forces you to see. So, yeah, I think so. I'm not going to go crazy and think that it changes everything dramatically. But, yeah, I think so. Your response, Mr. DeMaurice?
I definitely think it will. And here's why. When this country was founded, you didn't have diversity. And you saw the laws and policies that they were rolling with without the diverse groups as women and people of color. And then as you add folks to the mix and become more diverse and you have more women in politics and policies, you start to see the policies and things kind of change to really kind of cover folks that aren't part of that traditional paradigm or that traditional kind of way of thinking. And I think it will add more and more to the mix. Other young women will start seeing these women and say, you know what? In order to, there's a saying, in order to be it, you got to see it. So they will see this and they will move in those directions to become more powerful. And we see in this country as women emerge in more powerful positions, especially in the government and in policies, things start to change. You start to see another perspective. And this galvanized other people who feel the same way. So I definitely feel like it's already started, back with, even before Shirley Chisholm and all that, it's going to emerge more and more and more. And I think it lit a fire that you know, they got to be involved. And I remember talking to a group earlier this week that you got to be more involved in order to change the current laws and policies. And if you're not involved, then how are they going to know how you feel? How are they going to know what you go through? Real quick, the question was, is that, and I found this out when, you know, with my daughter, is that I didn't know up until then that women pay an extra tax for feminine products. I did not know that. They pay an extra tax to get feminine hygiene products. And so I'm like, why is that? You know, they need that. It's not something that's a luxury. It's something that they need. Why are they paying that? And we were discussing and debating on what should women and other people and men do to stop this unfair tax on women. And we got to get more people involved and all that stuff and take your power in doing that. So definitely I think it's going to make a big difference.
Hmm. Your response, Mr. Jones?
Yeah, I think it does. I'm still interested to see how far it goes, because the fact that she was elected says a lot, I think. But I want to see how far it goes in regards to how women are viewed, women of color are viewed, and how far they're allowed to come up, if you will. I want to see what what happens, the actions afterwards when she's been in office a little bit longer.
John, I'm going to bring up something that I brought up on the sports show last week, and we'll spend a little time on it. Let me come to you first, Mr. Jimmy. If you have another question to offer, we'll go to your question first. You have another question you want to answer?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
Okay.
What I was going to go into is we know that in NFL, they don't hire many minority coaches, and the percentage of NFL players are minority, in a sense. And I've been saying for a while that's not going to change into the players and minority kind of speak out. But as a coach for Kansas City Chiefs, assistant coach Eric Bieniemy has been trying to get a job for the past couple of years. And last year they say in an interview, well, this year there were 7 openings. He didn't even get a second interview. I think he might have got an interview by 6 teams, but no, he didn't get a second call back at any one of them. And what I find interesting is that this week the NFL said they're going to change it to where the coaches can – and they do everything to dance around the mere fact he didn't get the job or he didn't get a second because he's black. They don't want to really open himself up to that, but we know I see that for what it is. But what I found to be real interesting is the coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mike Tomlin, came out, and I guess he was acting like he was throwing support behind what was going on. He said he can't believe Eric Bieniemy didn't get a head coaching job, and he doesn't understand why. You know, here again, he wants to not acknowledge the fact because more than likely the guy's black. What was interesting was Mike Tomlin didn't realize that in saying such, they quickly reviewed the fact that as long as he's been a head coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers, he haven't hired a black offensive defensive coordinator. And they came to him with that, and he had no regrets. So my question is, Mr. DeMaurice, how can Mike Tomlin speak out on what owners aren't doing when he's black? In a situation to hire, he doesn't hire someone that looks like him.
You know, when you brought that up, I've been trying to understand that, and the only answer I came up with is that he's pretty much out of touch. He got his. He's satisfied. He's in a job where he's not going to be fired. He's going to have to step away because of the way that organization kind of rolls. And the same rule that's named after the family that owns that organization don't seem to be adhering. They pretty much to me have said, okay, we did our part. We have a black head coach, so we don't have to kind of answer any questions about hiring, you know, black coaches. We already got that. But in the same sense, almost like, and I don't know this for sure, really kind of setting the stage where, listen, we got ours. We don't have to go after anybody else, so we control this. And so I couldn't believe that he really kind of say, you know, he doesn't regret it when sometimes and most oftentimes folks that get that experience at the offensive coordinator or assistant offensive coordinator or different types of coaches on your team, people get a sense of how they coach. They build a track record, and it helps them land jobs easier. And so for him saying that, it's almost like he's saying, you know, well, I'm not going to create any opportunities. They got to go get theirs. I got mine. They got to go get theirs. When you know that, you know, coaches like Lefkowitz, you know, other black coaches who are serving as assistants and coordinators and things of that sort, people look at them a little bit more seriously because the organization took a chance on them to bring them into their organization. And so they can prove themselves as worthy as working for that organization. And if they want to land a greater job, they can do so. So I was really surprised that he would do that. But the only answer that comes up to me, man, is that this guy is out of touch. He got his. He ain't worrying about nobody else. And he closed the door, like I said on the Charles said on the show. Closed the door. I got mine. So, you know, I'm cutting it off for everybody else. I'm not worried about anybody else. It's just me. And it's all about me. I got mine. The Rooney's got theirs. And then we're good.
Which is interesting because he only came to prominence due to Tony Dungy.
Yep.
He was on the staff of Tony Dungy, yeah, that had other black assistants. And that's how he got looked upon to get the job that it is. So that is utterly amazing. Mr. Charles, you know, here again, the man has no regrets. He's been the coach. Think about this now. He's been the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers for quite some time. Different coordinators. Todd Haley was one. Todd Haley's not one. The coordinator that the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that won the Super Bowl worked under Mike Tomlin. He's not black. And the man has no, I mean, yeah, he doesn't regret it. So how can he come out? How can he? And this is like the mindset, you know, and this is where I want to go with this conversation because it's always a throw rocks at the owners and, you know, yeah, they this, they that, whatever. But when the black men don't want to hire black, what are we doing, Mr. Charles?
Well, I mean, I think he feels like he's in the ultimate situation. The Rooneys were the one that's pressed for the rule. They have not had many head coaches in the history. And the fact that they chose an African American who's been there for a while, they're like, we're done. I mean, he's following in the suit with that. But is it ego? Whatever it is, I'm not sure. But whatever it is, he says, I'm done, I'm good, I don't need it. But he also speaks to the fact that a guy like Eric Bieniemy deserves a shot. Maybe he thinks that, well, they're good enough to be head coaches. I'm a head coach. I have my job. Why can't he be a head coach? He's an outstanding talent. And you see what happens if you have a great talent that's African-American. He can do wonders for you. But when it comes to your staff, you won't have to do that. It's almost like I don't have to do y'all no damn favors. I don't care what you say, Mr. Mark or whoever else, or Mr. D. Maurice or Mr. Charles, I can do what the hell I want to do because I'm in charge. And what I find ironic about it is naturally you would think that he would be open to hiring somebody who looks like him. But then again, certain people get in certain positions because of their status, and they turn a blind eye to it. It's like, doesn't bother me. I'm going to hire who I want to because now I'm in place. I don't understand it. I really don't, but not surprised. It happens all the time. We've seen that in history. Certain people do that. But it's really weird because in the opposite end, we're over here discussing or arguing, championing for more African-American coaches, and the white owners are hiring people that look like them. But a head coach won't hire somebody to look like him. Maybe he don't think they're going to do a great job. Only he can. Anyway, that's something for you right there.
I'm going to take a different route here, and I think Mike Tomlin is very insecure, bro. Very insecure, and I know someone said this about ESPN, and I think they were talking about Stephen A. Smith. They were on their way out of ESPN, and they said sometimes black people don't like to work around the black people. When in a certain situation, they want to be the only black person there. Because they fear your progress. They fear you outdoing and being better and smarter than what they are. and Mike Thomas is trying to maintain. I told Mr. DeVries that he's been there for a while, but let me just tell you something. Bill's going to go to the transformation, bro. And he may not be there when the transformation is over. Yeah, he's had a good tenure, but he may not be. And maybe when he's not, because if he can't get them to turn around real quickly and start winning, Pittsburgh ain't going to a long losing streak, bro. His job was up for grab a couple of years ago. But getting back to my point, I think he's afraid. I think he's afraid to bring someone in that looks like him and open up the possibility that person may take his job in the long run. And that rolls through his head. Because there's no way you can't work for an organization that put the Rooney Rule out and you can say, I want to hire such and such, and they probably come and tell you no. I just find that hard to believe. I find that very hard to believe. So I don't think it's the Rooney's. I think it's him. I think he goes out of his way not to hire someone that looks like him. Especially when he come back and tell you immediately, I don't regret it. No, that's some self-awareness of himself. He wants to maintain who he is. He wants to be the only Negro walking around that plantation, bro. That's it. You know, they can play for him, but they can't work along with him. And in a way, I'm kind of glad he got called out on it because it shows you exactly who Mike Tomlin is. And it's no more guessing. And, you know, like you said on the show, Mr. Dean, he might have been better off keeping his mouth shut. I remember there was a coach now, and he wasn't even, you know, this coach couldn't win a playoff game, Marvin Lewis. But look at all the – when you look at Marvin Lewis' sideline, look at all the faces that look like him. Look at all the people that Marvin Lewis employed. Just think about that. So, I mean, you look at Mike Tomlin, I lose a lot of respect for him. I don't care how many games he wins from this point on. I'll be honest with you. I can't support him. I'm happy that he got his position. But, yeah, Tony Dungy helped you propel to where you are. Who have you propelled, my brother? Who? You know, realistically. Your own team, for the most part, and your quarterback don't respect you. So keep living like that, and good luck. But here again, I'm glad he opened his mouth, but I think it's just primary basic fear. That's happened to a lot of times with us, man. We don't want people around us that look like us. We want to be the only ones that white people look up and admire. We want all that attention and glow to ourselves. And to me, he falls into that category. You know, I've been in situations, man, where, you know, you come in, and the older black people have been there for a while, they're afraid. Afraid of what? Because the whites have been treating you good for a while. So you thinking me coming in is going to take away from that? I've dealt with it and dealt with it strongly. You know, let them know straight of hand because it is what it is. It's amazing as black people how we treat each other and think of each other. And then when it's convenient, you want to step up and act like you black and talk black. Go sit your little ass down. I read a story the other day, man. I found it to be comical, but it was real interesting. This cat and this woman was dating for a short period of time, around for 3 dates, and it was determined that, you know, it wasn't going to go anywhere. So the guy basically texted her and said, being that, you know, we're not meant for each other, we're not going to be seated for a period of time, I would like you to pay half for all the 3 dates we're on. So he calculated. He calculated the charge, but what it would have cost, her percentage of paying for those dates, and he asked for that money back. Since you laughed first, Mr. DeRees, your reaction, my brother.
You should have started the show with this. I don't know. I would guess he's not getting that money back. He is not getting that money back. Nice try. I like how you think. He ain't getting that money back. You should have signed the agreement before you went on the date. In case this doesn't work out and we're not going to take this, you know, long term, then, you know, everything that I buy, we're going to split. I'd be going to an agreement like that. That could be an idea for future dating.
You know, we did a show, it was a few years ago, Why Men Aren't Dating Like They Used To. And there it is right there. See, women alone want to take me out. I kept getting to know you. You're getting to know me while you're eating lobster, you're eating shrimp, you know, all this good stuff. You're getting, you're getting your stomach fed. And men have caught on to that. We ain't spending all that for you to get to know us.
I'm getting to know you.
Mr. Charles, your reaction, sir?
Yeah, you're not getting that back, bro. You got to set some ground rules. And I'm going to bring it to you from a personal standpoint. Anyway, this is really bad, but I hope they ain't listening. Anyway, so I had a situation where I had a friend, and we were kind of like hanging out. And, you know, I was like, oh, it's kind of cool. We might be kind of getting close to dating or hanging out. It was real good. I liked her. She liked me. We were friends first. So then, you know, first couple times after that, we started going out. So it got to about day three, and I'm like, you ain't really showing me no affection. You ain't really showing me that you like me. You ain't even getting really close to me. But I'm paying for, like, a decent amount of dates, like 3 dates, and I'm paying out my budget. And she never really just kind of showed anything else. So she called up and said, hey, you want to go to the second place? I was like, yeah, I want to. I said, but when we go this time, you got to pay your own way. For real. I said that. I was like, you got to pay your own way. If you're killing me right now, if you don't want to be down, I don't mind hanging out with you. But let's put the parameters on the joint. You got to put in your own money. She's like, okay. And then she's like, well, I'll pay the next couple of times if you don't mind. I was like, yeah, okay, now you got the hint. You ain't doing nothing. You got to pay. Cause I ain't no fools over here. I ain't mad at you. I like your company. But we can hang out without me paying for you, can't we? Since we just friends, right? Friends paid, okay?
Come back to this, Mr. Charles. What I find interesting is that how do they say they want to go somewhere if they're not willing to pay? How does that happen? Because if I'm asking you to do something, doesn't that mean that I'm taking care of it? But how do they ask you or suggest they want to go somewhere and they're not pay? How does that work? I'm just trying to figure that out. I'm an alien at this point. Explain that to me.
Well, that calls to that point where they have designated, they went back to what the old wise woman's tale was from back in the day. That's what men are supposed to do, right? Even when they're just getting to know you, a true gentleman does that. But then that's also a gentleman, or AKA slash after day three, a fool. Because you have to be able to see if a woman is interested in you or not. And for you to keep, she can call you up because she's hungry. You know, I thought we should get something. I think I want to go here. We should go. You won't even go into your purse to even give a dime or leave the tip. The devil is a liar. At some point, you got to cut that off. Yeah.
Oh. Mr. DeBrees, how that works out, man. I'm an alien. Explain it to me, my brother.
It does it. Because, yeah, when you offer like that, it means that, hey, I got the money. Let's do this. Or at least go half on this. So you coming up with the idea, you know, it's supposed to be, you know, let's go out to lunch. The person that's saying that is like, you know, the person that's supposed to pay. Because it's like, if you coming up with the idea, the person that, you know, you're giving the idea to, they may say, well, yeah, I would like to, but I'm a little short on cash. And the person that kind of gets the idea goes, no, I'm treating. This is my treat. Yeah, this is my idea. This is my treat. That's how it usually works. Not in dating. Not in dating. And this is one of those old rituals that if the man wants you, you got to pay for it, you know. And sometimes that creates a tense situation. Because then you go back to, you know, maybe the man feels like you owe him something after he put all that money out there. It sends really crazy signals.
Gentlemen, we're going to wrap this up, but I'll say this, man. I've said this on the show before, and I'll continue to say this. Women, here's where they amaze me sometimes. They amaze me in a lot of areas, but they want you to be traditional when it works in their favor, but they want to be untraditional when it works in their favor. And that's what it always comes down to. They want you to be that traditional man. I'm getting to know you. Well, you got to spend no money to get to know me. No money has to be spent to get to know me. But that's a form of us sitting out, playing like a lifestyle, lifetime style of living. You're getting to know me. But here again, they want you to be traditional when they need you to be. But they can be untraditional. Gentlemen, we get together Thursday for the sports show. In the meantime, you all stay safe, stay cool. I know you're going to stay black, so I ain't going to say that. We'll get together and do it soon. Appreciate it. Mr. DeMaurice, Mr. Charles, Mark Elliott, One Black Man Talk.